Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. So today we have a special guest, my friend Bruce from Rhode Island, who was on Survivor. I believe it was 44 and 45. So we're going to have him on and we're going to go over some life lessons, some things that he learned from his experience on the show Survivor. All right. And here he is.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey. Magic. Bruce is in the hizzy.
Right. That's right. I love magic.
Yeah. So
I love the name. It's like life lessons and laughter. Like that's every part of what it is that I do all the time. I'm always laughing. I'm always learning something and there's always a lesson to be had. So, you know, but this just makes sense. It feels so nice.
Perfect. And I agree with you, you know, like we spent some time together when I lived in Rhode Island. And I agree with you. That is how you live your life. You know, you're definitely a student of life and you're definitely laughing all the time. So it's like, you know, you're a fun guy to be around. You know, you're a mushroom. What do you call a mushroom that buys all the drinks?
This sounds like a great dad joke. I don't know. Please tell me.
A fun guy to be with.
Man, listen. Had I said that joke while I was on Survivor, they all would have walked away from me. That would have been, but I would have laughed my backside off, like, dude, it's great. And they would have been like,
oh, yeah, yeah,
this stayed right.
I think this kind of happens at a certain age or something. I think it's freaking hilarious, but definitely a dad joke.
Nice. Hey, you get an A+ for that one. I appreciate it.
So, yeah, I mean, this is. You know, it was, I had posted on social media, hey, what do you guys want me to talk about? And a mutual friend of ours, Emily, was like, hey, you should talk to Bruce.
Oh, Emily, I love her. She's amazing.
She's a great girl, you know, and it's, that's how we met through her. Mm-hmm. So, and like, yeah, I was like, wow, you know, that actually really is a great idea. And I said, so I reached out to you and I was like, Bruce, you know, my podcast is called Life Lessons and Laughter. Like, and I know you're laughing all the time and, you know, and I know that you actually are a student of life and you just had this amazing experience on Survivor that like I had never watched a show before. And, you know, I'm up here in the mountains of the DR. So I'm streaming TV. I literally went and got a subscription to Paramount Plus specifically to watch your show and dropped it as soon as your show was done.
a lot of my friends have done that.
Yeah. So, you know, because I wanted to see this experience and I had never seen the show before. And, you know, to me being a life coach and the way that I live my life, the real big profound takeaway that I had from watching that show was the transformation, the life transformation that people went through on that show, these epiphanies that they were having, the how they really gained clarity on some things, learned some things. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is now, you know, I mean, I'm not interested in going on that show. However, what a beautiful experience for people who are drawn to that particular show to be able to go somewhere for, you know, somewhat of a short period of time and get the life altering epiphanies and changes that are received there by just about everybody that goes, probably everyone that goes, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you don't realize it, you know, the whole process that you go through takes some time. I started my journey with trying to get on Survivor, mentally wanted to get on Survivor episode, you know, 3 of season 1. Like, I loved the show from the very beginning. But then, you know, when I actually put my tape in, well, I say tape because I'm old. When I put my video in online, I did my application. That was back in 2019. And, you know, it's such a long, long, long process. And, you know, you finally get on the show. Myself personally, I took a different route than most people did. Like, I got hurt. So on season 44, so I got medevaced out and I wasn't even there for 12 hours. And I'm like, this is my life experience. This is my experience as a survivor, something that I wanted, and I'm done. And then I find out 9.5 months later that I'm being requested to come back on the show and offered the ability. I'm like, yes, I'll take it all day. And I went, and then I finally got there. You know, you go through the process and then you go into the hotel in LA and you stay in LA for a couple of days and you fly you out to Fiji and like, yes, we're getting ready to go. And then you have the whole process you're going to go through in Fiji and you're waiting, you're sitting around waiting, you're going doing this, you're going taking a boat to take pictures, you're taking a boat to go and do press, you know, and then you're sitting there and they set up a computer for Zoom and you're doing, you know, pre-game interviews and all that stuff. And it's not really real. Like you're around everyone. You're still technically around civilization, if you will. But then when you get your buff and then when, I have my old buff over there. When you get your buff and it's like, okay, so I'm going to get started with this game. And then you start and now you're only around six people and you get along with them, but you don't get along with them because you're trying to win $1 million. And then you now are thrust into this, like, okay, I got to rely on these people. And then when you get your alone time, you start thinking about family and friends and things like that. And then it all starts hitting you that, well, my resources that keep me sane are gone. So you kind of you have to learn to adapt at that point in time.
Yeah, that's it. That's, you know, that was, I think, a beautiful recap because it's like, yeah, I'm sure it's kind of surreal in the beginning because you're just caught up doing what you need to do and it's kind of a hurry up and wait situation and you just kind of, and then all of a sudden, it's on and you're doing it and you're like, oh, wow. Okay. You know, now I have to actually do this. And it all probably, you know, from what you described just now, it sounds like it kind of all hits at once. It's kind of like, okay, I need to try to win $1 million. So I need to play a certain way, but these are human beings that I actually have to be with and kind of want to get along with to some degree too. Yeah. And everything that I've known, all my securities, all the things that make life habitual, I guess, you know, I'm drawing a correlation now from what you said to my moving up to the mountains of the DR.
Yeah.
It's when I came over here, it slowed me down so much because I was like, I had to think about everything. Like I can't just go brush my teeth. I have to think like, okay, brush my teeth, but don't use the water. Mm-hmm. I want to make coffee. Okay, well, I have a coffee maker, but I have to go over to a jug and start pumping the water to get it in there. And then where, like everything you have to think about. And you, so it's amazing how much of our lives, I think, especially in the United States and other developed countries that are so habitual and so we just don't think about, you don't think about flipping a light switch on or starting your car or trying to figure out where to get food or like you don't have any of that. It's just there and you have your habits and you know, and it's like, well, do you want to go to this place or that place for dinner tonight? You know, that's your big decision. Yeah. You know? So all that stripped. So that must have been like, you know, it was a little bit of a culture shock for me, but I imagine it was even a larger culture shock for you because you really didn't have anything. At least I was in a house, you know, with things around me.
It was, you know, if you go back and you see episode one and you see our marooning and we have that first, you know, we're on the barge, it's great. And then we jump off and I do my little jump, a little iconic jump that was all over the broadcasts and the commercials and stuff like that, which I loved. And then they show us, you know, after that's all done, they show us getting to the beach. I'm kind of like looking around, like in knowing that we don't have anything. There's nothing. There's not that cup of coffee that you said that you made. There's no light switches. There's no hut. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. We have to go out and we have to get bamboo. Now, bamboo is not you know, it's not indigenous of Fiji. It's just not. They fly it in, they throw it all over the place, and we just have to go and, you know, build a shelter from it, which is perfectly fine. If people didn't know that, now you know. So now what we do is, you know, we clear a spot. You know, you just start from the ground up, and it's the premise from behind the show is that if you're on an airplane, and you know, people would ask me questions like, why are you in a button-down shirt and a pair of slacks? Like, yeah, that's what I would have normally worn to go to work. So they kind of look at it like, what are you going to wear if you are abandoned on an island like that? So if you're on a plane crashes, just a bunch of people live, you end up on an island, what would you be wearing? And that's what I would be wearing. So that's how they use that premise. So, you know, if someone like Austin, you know, big dude, big muscles, extremely smart and intelligent, I can say. He was in like a pair of like, you know, almost like sweats kinda with a muscle shirt and stuff like that, like in like a fleece. That's what he would normally wear. So you get thrown into that, and I remember very distinctly, like, you know, the questions that started being asked. Those questions were being asked to me and also to the group, but they were being asked to me because I'm at this point, I'm 46 years old. I'm with a bunch of kids that are like, you know, I say kids affectionately, but I'm with a bunch of people that are bare minimum 16 years younger than me. So I've been camping a ton of times. You know, I don't want to say going without, but I've learned how to just be able to eat certain things and, you know, want to try to build a fire, build a shelter, this, and like scavenge for things. Because I'm older, I've done it a million times because that's what I used to do. And it's easy to me. So when they're asking me questions, I'm more than happy to answer the questions and also put it out to, you know, everybody's thought. On the show, they just showed like I was being bossy. Ah, go get that and go get that. While you're doing that, make sure you get that.
I was watching some of the show, and like, you know, I mean, I'm not, I know that reality shows, they clip and they cut and they try to play certain, you know, themes and stuff. And, you know, I was like, yeah, that knowing somebody that's on one of those shows, you know, I know you, I mean, so I'm like, yeah, they really do that. You can tell that they're really kind of pushing a particular story with particular people.
Yeah, then my narrative was the dad narrative, even though I tried, you know, see my name right there, it's Uncle Bruce. You know, I tried as hard as humanly possible to, and I think I did pretty well. There were some points in time, because you get, somebody even said to me, well, why didn't you just pretend to be X, Y, and Z? Well, when you pretend, and then you start getting hungry, you're thirsty, you're tired, people's personalities rub you the wrong way. Then when the real you comes out, oh man, like that's a doomsday wish. So I would have rather just been, I was myself, you know, you see me dancing around, having a good time. Like that was me. Plus I was on 44 and now I'm on 45. And I kept saying, my phrase was, I'm playing with house money. I'm just going to have a damn good time while I'm here. Like, yeah, as much as I can, I'm playing with house money. I'm going to have a good time, and I'm going to be unapologetic about it. And that was it. I danced, I sung, you know, cracked dad jokes, and had some serious, obviously, you know, conversations and things like that. You have to. But it's just, you have to be, and I would say this all the time to people, like, if you can unapologetically be yourself with everything you do, your life is going to be so much easier. It's other people that got to learn to adapt to who you are. And that's kind of the thought process that I took.
Well, and I agree with you, you know, it's one of the, really the foundational principles when I started life coaching, because it's, you know, like when I was getting into it, I'm like, you're so conscious of what you're creating. It's like, okay, what do I want to create here? You know, so like sometimes, you know, people would come in to sessions and just want to complain about their lives. And I'm like, that's not what I do. Like, I help you fix yours. I don't sit here and listen to you complain so you feel a little bit better. And then you go back out into your life. You don't change anything. You come back 2 weeks later and you pay me to listen to you complain. Like, I can't do that because I couldn't have a business like that.
Yeah.
And I want longevity in the business. So I was like, I have to be myself. I need to, I need to coach people in what I believe to be true. And I'm not one that can sit around listening to people complain. It's going to drive me crazy. Let's get to the solution. And I think you're similar in that way too. You're solution based guy.
Yeah. I'm very empathetic. Like I can understand when someone's going through something fully. But the other side of it is, okay, so what can we do to make it a better situation? So I listen. I'm not sympathetic. Like, oh my God, like let's cry together. No, I don't want to cry with you. You come to me with the problem. Let's try to fix it. So that's the principle I guide myself with.
Yeah. And so it's solution based and it's, and it's this podcast, it's like most of at least 90% of the feedback, probably more, probably 95% of the feedback I get on this podcast over the last 9-10 years, however long I've been doing it, is positive.
That's good.
Which is cool, right? Yeah. Everybody likes positive feedback, but I don't live by it. When I do see the negative feedback, like usually what it is people saying like, oh, you should do this. You should do this. I don't like that you don't do this. I don't like that you do this. And like, as I'm reading it, what I'm hearing is I shouldn't be listening to Glenn's podcast because blah, 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 because I am not changing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change how I do my podcast. I'm not changing who I am. I'm not changing how I think. This is, and the reason I don't is because it allows people who resonate with who I am and the way that I speak and the way that I teach to find me. Mm-hmm. If I'm pretending to be somebody else, the ones that actually resonate with me will never find me. Instead, I'll have a bunch of people that shouldn't be working with me find me because they resonate with my representative. And then that'll implode at some point anyway. So it's and I think that's just my work example, but I believe life is like that. The more we are with a... You're never going to have a real connection with somebody if you're connecting with their representative. If you're connecting with their authentic self, that's where deep connection's made.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like it.
Yeah. So what are some of the life lessons that you learned? What were some of your big takeaways from Survivor?
It's funny that question was asked in somewhat of a different way, but the same way. So life lessons for myself, like I had an epiphany when I was on the show, like, am I that guy? Am I, the bossy, blah, 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 blah. And when one of the contestants, Kelly, was voted out, that was when, let's back up. I played this game based. I'm willing to learn about people. Obviously, you have to, and hear about what they're going through, what they've been through in their lives, whatever they give to you. But my game based mind was saying, "This is game based. Like, how much of this is true?" Come to find out, there were truths and there were lies and there was elaborations. So. Myself, when I went out there, I gave everything that I already had. Like I let everybody know exactly who I am, what it is that I did. And that I kind of had to do because of season 44, they already kind of chronicalized who I am and what I do. So now I can't lie. I can't be like, I'm 35 years old. I can't tell people I'm 35 years old. They all know that I'm in my 40s. And that could have been something that I would have done for season 44. Like, I don't look like I'm 47 years old today. Like, I'm not being conceited. I'm just saying I don't look like I'm 47 years old. But sometimes you can drag those things on. So my thing in the game was it was all game-based. So my epiphany that I had with having conversations with people, and I felt that I was very close with a few of the people that were there, was that when one person was voted out, which was Kelly, we came back from tribal council and people were mentioning that, Bruce, she felt like you were holding her back. You were overbearing this and the other. And I'm like, what? Like what? Because not at any point in time did anybody say anything about that. Like I would catch the occasional, like whatever, roll of an eye, but that's like me being upstairs with my kids. Like that, you get the occasional roll of the eye all the time. Sydney would give it to me all the time, but you get it. It's understandable. So you don't really put it together with anybody feeling negative towards you. And then on the show, I had this epiphany that was like, you know, like, oh man, like, I remember very distinctly where I was walking to a confessional, which is when they sit with the camera, they just kind of talk to us and, you know, ask us questions. I remember sitting down and, you know, I kind of felt bad thinking about it afterwards. Not now. Now I can really care. But when they sat me down and started asking me questions, I said, nah, expletive, I'm not talking about any of this game stuff. Like, I don't want to talk about the game. We're going to talk about my feelings right now. Like, I feel like I feel some kind of way. And it was a genuine feeling because I was upset. I was upset for, you know, the remainder of the night into the morning when I had that, you know, that confessional. It made like my epiphany at that point in time. And the thing that I kind of grew and learned from is that I could be the person that they're talking about. I could be the person that's overbearing and the person that's, you know, holding the thumb down on people. But it was a young woman that's saying this. So now I'm thinking about my wife and I'm thinking about, you know, is my wife married to a man that's overbearing? Is my daughter, does she have a father that's overbearing that's not going to allow her to grow and be who she wants to be? I have a son. Am I teaching my son to be that way towards women? Like, those are the things that were going through my head, you know, and that ruined for a period of time. It might seem, you know, it was probably for 16 hours. And 16 hours might not seem like a long period of time where it kind of mentally ruined me. But during the course of this 26-day game, oh, yeah, that's years if you really break it down. So, you know, that was my thing. And I had to come to grips with that. I had to come to grips with a couple of different things. That I know who I am. I had to come to grips with that. I had to come to grips with I can't control how this other person is thinking in regards to the scenario. So that's kind of the life lesson that I probably learned. Like, I'm going to always be the adult in the room. There's no getting around it. I'm always going to be the adult in the room. I'm going to have a good time, but I'm going to also think above and beyond, like, what people think my actions might be. Meaning, if something's happening, like, I'll take a step back and be like, wait a minute, let's talk about that. As opposed to just, let's roll with it. So that helped to pull me in a little bit more, hearing that scenario. As far as for the fun stuff, that's the serious stuff.
That's some good stuff. You know, I mean, I think that that's a really important, especially like right now, there's such a, you know, I'm kind of going out a little bit just on a spiritual wing. I mean, there's just such a rise in the divine feminine energy because we've been out of balance with this toxic masculine war acquisition mentality for too long. And I think we're coming out of that, or we're trying to anyway. So there's this rise of the feminine energy coming up and it affects both sides. I mean, the women are stepping into their power more and we as men, you know, it's like we've been conditioned too. Like even good guys, like I don't think you or myself are bad towards women in any way. But there's also, you know, tens of thousands of years of social conditioning behind us, you know. So I think it behooves us as men to stop, hit the brakes for a moment and look and just question. It doesn't mean we're doing anything wrong, but it's a serious topic to sit there and go, hey, wait a minute now. How am I behaving? And being able to be honest with ourselves and make adjustments that are necessary where they are. You know, and I think that that's half of it. And I think that that's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I think the other half of it at the end of the day is understanding that everybody is functioning from their own perspective and we can't control how other people interpret our behaviors. We can try to treat people with respect, but, you know, and I'm not saying that this happened on a show. I'm just talking about the bigger topic at the moment. Yeah. Like, when we can treat people with respect, and I've had this happen to me where women said I was degrading and I went, what? And, you know, I went back and I looked and I'm like, no, I'm literally not. I know that I'm not. I've talked it out with other people. They, you know, like to get multiple perspectives. I was definitely not degrading them. They were projecting their stuff onto me. They were feeling insecure and they're projecting it onto me. And I need to be okay understanding that happens. We have to be honest with ourselves, because sometimes it is our behavior that needs adjusting. Sometimes it's their perception, and we have to understand both.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, and actually that you mentioned that scenario in general. As we all know, during the season 45, you know, I was the bane of someone's existence on the show. Katara could not stand me. And, you know, I sat there and I struggled with it when this show actually, because everything that was going on, I had no idea of during the taping of the show. When I was voted out, I came out of the game and I had my own struggles that I needed to deal with. You know, just hating that I was out of the game and, like, you know, the personalities that I was dealing with at that point in time. But then Katara gets voted out and I try to have a conversation with her, and the conversation went nowhere. Because unbeknownst to me, she had felt a certain way in regards to me that whatever, like, I don't know, I'm just trying to throw out the olive branch, call it a day. And one of the biggest things is, you know, we talk about perception. I am a very, like, I love to chat with people and have fun. And it's, I don't care how old you are. I'm going to say something, and it's a term of endearment in my mind. And if you tell me that you don't like it, say it to me, because then at that point in time, like, oh, my bad. Like, all right, cool. Glenn, like, we're fine. But what I would say is I say, kid, hey, what's going on, kid? Like, you know, like, that's fun. Like somebody saying to somebody else, hey, guy, how are you? Or, you know, a woman saying to another woman, hey, girl, right? So that I say, hey, kid, what's going on, kid? Took it very personal. Like, I was, now I'm degrading and I'm demeaning her because I'm calling. No, that's not what it is. Your perception is that. But if you come around to say to me, and this is what I implore a lot of people to do, if there's something that you don't feel comfortable with, just say it. And give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Be like, oh, my bad. Like, my fault. Which, you know, like with the toxic masculinity and all this other stuff. If you feel a certain way, like, either just say something and then walk away from the scenario. Mm-hmm. Because if you do that, you're at least putting an imprint in someone's mind. If the person's a complete scumbag, they're going to be a scumbag and you don't need to deal with them. But if they're like myself, like if I was told that, I'd be like, whoa, wait a minute, hold on, I'm sorry. Not at any point in time did I mean any disrespect. But then, throughout the course of watching the show, I'm like, week one and week two, I'm like, ah, it's funny. Week three, four, five, six, seven, I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then eight and nine, I'm like, oh, okay. So she was deflecting, as you had said earlier. This woman was deflecting on me what she had gone through. Like, I reminded her of her father that put her into a cult and was going to marry her off to the elder. Like, I am not that dude. So are you looking at every black man and saying, okay, if he has a voice like mine and a face like mine and eyes and ears like mine, like, you're going to now say that they are someone that you can't get along with and you can't see eye to eye with and you can't have a relationship with friendly, because you're going to depict what you've gone through in your life on somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then try to put it on me. So I had to squash it quickly and be like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing what you're requesting me to do because I didn't do anything wrong. You can't hold me at fault for existing, you know? And that's what we're talking about. Like, that's what the shift in society is that there are a lot of people that hold people accountable for other people's actions. And it's like, you know, the most heinous crimes, listen, I can't put myself in those shoes, but what I can do is say something in my scenario is that the only thing I can do is remove myself from the situation, express myself as to what I did, you know, like how I felt about the situation, and then be like, okay, I'm good. And since then, I've actually come to peace with myself, because now I'm not sitting there thinking, oh man, what did I do? When I realized I didn't do anything, I was just, like I said, I just existed. So what I would ever say to anybody is, you know, if there's ever a point in time where you feel like, or, you know, if you are on the receiving end of someone's angst, just ask the question, like, where's this coming from?
Right.
And then they can give you, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, really, where's it coming from? Because it just seems a little hostile. And then they'll give you the answer that you're looking for after the second or third question about why they're treating you the way they are. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we have to improve our communication because we don't really have communication anymore. We have, you know, we're a lot of times we're trying to prove points and you know, like you know, like most people in that situation, quite honestly, I think in society right now, the reason that people don't say things in that scenario is because they think that it's going to start a fight. You know, like I'll, you know, I'll put myself in, and by no means am I, like, I'm not trying to be her. I'm not trying to climb into her body and say, like, this is what she would say. You know, I'm just kind of using this dynamic as a learning example. Exactly. It's like she might not have, it's possible that maybe one of the reasons why she didn't say anything is maybe she thought that like if she said, hey, kid is demeaning, you're going to go, no, it's not demeaning, and screw it. And then all of a sudden it turns into an argument, which quite honestly, a lot of times it does do that in society. And this is, yeah, I think, what we need to start pulling back from and learn to just talk with one another without it being that big of a deal, and understanding that we're going to disagree. That's one of the biggest things right now. We don't understand that we disagree with other people. Yeah. Like, we don't think it's like okay to disagree with other people. And I don't know when the hell that started, but it's like, it's,
you know,
okay.
I have my thoughts on when it started. You know, I'm old school, just like you are. I'm not gonna, you know, and if you
listen, I'm 55, man, so I got a few years on you.
But like, you know, it's back in the day when you would say something to your parents, it's because I said so type stuff. And like anything else, you need to kind of ease into things. Like, you need to ease into the relationships with people and child rearing and things like that. And I think there was a point that we got to, I'm not a, you know, a college educated man with a PhD or anything like that. I just like pretend I do. But the, you know, when we started now becoming our kids' friends more than anything else, that's how I feel about it. And I'm very, you know, my kids and my, like, I'm friends with them a lot of the time and chill, but when it comes time to be a parent, it's to be a parent. And, you know, there are a lot of my friends, actually not really my friends, because they're my age, like the next group of people that will have kids, you know, kids out of control. You know, the kid is completely out of control and they're like, I'll live your truth. As in destroying your house. Like,
yeah. I think it's the accountability piece. It's like, yes, you know, like,
and now you can't have a conversation if there's no accountability. Like, you have to be accountable for your actions. Like, if you have to know you can't influence everyone. You can give them your information, you can accept their information, agree to disagree if you want to, but have the ability to be like, oh, well, maybe that makes sense. You know, unless you're like, you know, the sky is purple. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Take those glasses off. That's why it's purple. Like,
But even then, a lot of, if, you know, especially if it's somebody outside of your inner circle, right? If the sky's purple, it's like, okay, all right. Like, I went on a retreat. No kidding. This is weird, man. I just had this flash. I went on this retreat with Emily, you know, 15 years ago or something. And this is what happened at the retreat. It was with Michael Bernard Beckwith, and he was explaining something. It's so weird that it was at that retreat. And he was explaining something, and he said, what would you, like, if you walked down a hall and you were trying to find a room with a bunch of people to hang out with, and you walked into the first door and you said, hey, what room is this? And everybody said, oh, this is the 2 + 2 = 5 room. Now, and there's a bunch of other doors. What would you do? Would you go in, shut the door behind you, and try to convince everybody in that room that 2 + 2 = 4 because you know you're right? Or are you just going to go, oh, okay, shut the door and go try another door? You know, it's like, now,
well, if you're asking me that question, I'm going to be the guy that's going to walk in and say, okay, explain to you why 2 + 2 = 5.
Right. And I agree that you are that guy.
You know?
Yeah. And you know what? To be honest with you, I'm that guy too. But I found it not work so many times that as I age, the less and less I do it. When somebody says 2 + 2 = 5, I'm usually like, okay, this person and myself, like I've been at like parties and stuff where people, you know, that they they're like, oh, here's somebody that doesn't believe in any of the stuff that Glenn teaches. And Glenn can usually formulate words well, which I'm not doing now. But so I'm going to bring this person I'm going to bring this person over to Glenn, and Glenn's going to put him in his place or her place or whatever, you know? So they bring this person over and they introduce me. And the first thing out of their mouth is this guy, this person's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't believe in any of that crap. And I go, oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, you have the right to your beliefs. Yeah, no problem. And then we shake hands. Everything's fine. They walk away. And the person's like, what the hell, man? I thought you were going to put them into place. I thought you were going to explain stuff to them and jam it down their throat sideways and get them to make them look like a fool. So because you're right and they're wrong. I'm like, why? They showed me who they were as soon as they came over. They said, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm not interested in hearing your perspective. I'm sure I'm right and screw you. That's basically what they said as soon as they came over. So I just let them have their space. Why? Why? You know, there's almost 8 billion people on the planet. I don't need to be friends with them.
Yeah. You don't need to be friends with you. Need to, you know, and that's, you know, and that's another, you know, we're talking about life lessons. That's a life lesson that I give my kids. You know, and it was it was increasingly agitating with my daughter in high school, you know, with these girls. And girls are, you know, treacherous to each other. Boys will just fight and call it a day. But girls, like, there's a psychological warfare, and this is what I've experienced with my daughter. Anybody else can have a different, you know, opinion on it. But with my daughter, it's like, you know, there were certain things, and it was an escalation. And, you know, for lack of you know, using a profanity, but I said to him, like, no one gives two S's in regards to when this is over. When high school's over, like, nobody cares. Like, you're not even going to see these people anymore. You realize that? And she's like, but like, seriously, like, I want you to think about mom right now. Think about her core friends that she was in high school with. And she had a class of 300 and something people. And of that, let's just say 150 of them were girls. How many of them do you think she really sees and or talks to? Like, there's nobody. So let's put it all into perspective. That was her life lesson. Mm-hmm. You know? So I'm a firm believer in what you said. There's a billion people in this world. I would like to, if I got one negative person that's in my face, I'd like to meet two people that are not.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
It's okay, man. I think it goes, this is kind of cool. I love when it goes full circle, because it's like, it goes right back to being your authentic self.
Yes.
And confident in you. If you're your authentic self and you're confident in yourself, then all that stuff bounces right off of you, because you're not seeking external validation.
You know? Yeah, and or approval from someone else. They don't have the certificate to get my approval. So
right. There you go. Well, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. So you were about to lean into the fun stuff. So what's the fun stuff?
Oh, man. Fun stuff is, I am awesome at starting a fire. And I'm not even just saying that to be funny. Like, there were points in time when I was sitting there just watching people struggle with it. And I know that, like, they get to see in the back of my head, like, go ahead, keep trying. And they're doing their thing. And I got, you know, two people trying, and they're beating up the flint, and they break the flint. And, you know, Brando broke the flint. Oh, I was like, that is like the worst thing you can do on survival. You broke the flint, bro. Like, what are you doing? So we, you know, tie twine around the flint, because it's just like a piece of magnesium with like a little piece right on top right there. It's a strike. That's a striker. The striker comes up. And they just couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. They're trying and trying and trying. I'm just like, all right, well. And the funny thing about it is that, you know, I work backwards. So you got to prepare the fire pit and get everything ready to go. Then you get your materials to start and catch a fire. And then you start, and then you catch the fire. And then you go forward. So I just sat there and watched. You know, I got my arms crossed. So I'm doing something else. I'm just kind of hanging out. And you see it in the show when I'm sitting there and I'm going to lean. I go, give it to me, like this, right? Because I want to flip. Because they're like, Bruce, you want to try? I'm like, give it to me.
I want to try really freaking bad right now.
I dismantled what they did, and I was like, all right, cool. So I put, got my little half coconut, it's all hollowed out inside, and I did all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then tick, 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 tick. Oh, there it goes. Roll it over, put it in the fire. Boom, we got fire. Oh, my God, that was so quick. I'm like, I know. Good thing, bad thing, because if I had made it a little bit further, you know, they wouldn't have wanted to go to fire with me because I would. They would have known I would have made the fire quickly.
Oh, yeah, true.
Jake did a great job of pretending, I think, because when he was in the final four fire making with Katora, he was rock steady. He did a great job. He did a really, really good job. But that was one thing. You know, it was a fun little life lesson in knowing that I could do that if need be. The other kind of thing that I got over a little bit, I don't mind swimming in the ocean. I really don't. But we're in the South Pacific. Like, there are bigger things that eat people or make people kind of sick or, you know, just want to come out and say hi. So I kind of got over that a little bit by going in the water, and we got our fishing gear. We had won it in one of the challenges. We took second place. And our reward was a fishing gear, and it was the goggles and, you know, the it's called the Hawaiian sling. So we had one of those and, you know, nets and this and the other. But it was me, Jake, and Brando. We were going out, and I'm like, you know, rowing with Brando, like, oh, yeah, like, you guys are going in the water. And I'm just like, you know what? I think I'm just going to go in. I'm going to try it out. And in the back of my mind, and it was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous. You could see down, you know, 30 feet. Like, it was just all the way to the bottom. It was beautiful. Coral everywhere. Little fish is just staring at you like, hey, bud. Where'd you come from? Like, and they literally would come right up to your mask and be like, they weren't even big enough to try to eat. Like, but they'd come up to your mask and they'd be sitting there looking at you, you're looking at them, like, kind of cross-eyed because it's so close. But, you know, I got my life lesson that I got from that and what I learned is that, like, I can go in the ocean and to kind of eliminate a little bit of that you know, impractical fear, if you will, of wanting to, you know, stay out of the ocean because there are sharks in the water and there are eels and this and the other. Like, there's, yeah. That was huge.
I hear you. Yeah. That's, and I think it's good chipping away at that. I mean, you know, you strike me as a guy that doesn't, you know, like, you don't let fear hold you back that often in life, you know, let's be honest. But, yeah. and neither am I. But, like, you know, there is little things like that. And again, over here in the DR, it's like that, it's given me an opportunity to chip away at some of that stuff and just go and recognize it. Like, you know, like here, you can walk the beach for hours and not see another human being. Mm-hmm. Like the first time I did that, I was scared. I'm like, are the locals friendly? Am I going to stumble on somebody that's going to, you know, roll me and steal my money? Like, yeah. You know? And so I had that fear and it's like, whoa, Glenn, you know, just work through it, let it go. It's, you're okay. You're safe. And it, so little weird fears that I didn't even know, like, I'm good with the big life fears. Generally, I just kick the door open and go anyway. But it's those little residual ones that I didn't even know were there, you know, that I don't have an opportunity to blast through. When I came over here, it gave me the opportunity to blast through. And I think whenever in life we come across those, it's important to blow through.
Yeah.
Because I remember my son Mateo and I, who you know.
Yeah.
When he was young, we were in church one time. And it comes time where to shake hands. And I turn around and go to shake this guy's hand. And it was this older gentleman. And I, you know, I'm looking at him in the eyes to connect. And I got my hand out. And after a few seconds, I realized that there's nothing reaching back.
Mm-hmm.
And I look down and he's got his hands by his side. He's not interested in shaking my hand. And, but he's looking pleasant at me. Like, it's not about me. He just doesn't feel comfortable doing that, you know? So I just smile, I turn around, and then we leave. And Mateo's like, what's that about? You know, what was that about? And I said, I don't know. You know, I don't know what that was about. I said, you know, it could be many of his own personal reasons, but Mateo was dealing with some fear at that time. And I says, you know what that reminds me of though? I said, it's possible that he was scared to touch another person. Maybe he's like a germaphobe, you know, yeah. something like that. So that's a possible reason. And I said, and you know, how people get to that place is by letting fear take over them. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't, like, how do you think he got there where he's not willing to touch another human being that he doesn't know?
Like, if that's the question that you're asking, not rhetorical, it would be probably a scenario with, because he was older, you know, and he didn't want to get sick. Right.
Well, right. But I'm yeah. saying, you know, like I said, I was trying to use it to teach him something about fear. And what I was trying to use it to teach him was that fear expands if you allow it.
Yeah, that's right.
And it shrinks if you don't. So that's why whenever I see one of these little fears in me that bubble up, like, you know, getting in the ocean, because I actually have that one too from a really negative experience I had scuba diving when I got certified. I had a barracuda coming at me and I jumped in the water and I had jumped into a bunch of jellyfish and it was geez. Plus I was seasick, so I was puking through my regulator. It was a nightmare. So it was bad. So I had these fears, and it was like when I came over here, getting in back in that ocean, I had that same fear. Like, yeah. what's down there? I liked it better when I didn't know what was down there. You know, that yeah. mentality. Yeah. So
swimming pools are amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, but when those come up, I think this is a really good life lesson for people, because it's, you know, a lot of people I noticed that they'll be like, oh, I'm scared of spiders, or I'm scared of bugs, or something like that. And they just say it matter-of-factly. And that's mm-hmm. not how I see it. I look at it like, if I'm scared of something, to me, it's like, okay, is there something that I can do? Maybe, maybe not. Is there something that I can do to work through that? Because I don't want fear to take over more of me a little at a time. You know, that's how people end up stuck in their house. Nobody, you know, people don't become shut-ins in a week. Yeah. They become a shut-in over years. And that what happens is they're scared of one thing and then they don't overcome it. They allow it to control their lives. And then they get scared of another thing and then another thing and another thing. So the fear expands and takes over more of you if you allow it. But if every time you see it, you go, no, I'm not going to let this control me. Is there something that I can do to work through this? Then it has less and less a hold over you.
That is correct. I agree with you. I agree.
There we go. See, another life lesson for the people. All spawned off of your fear of the ocean.
Yeah.
That's what I love. It's, I guess, you know, and it, I guess we got to wrap up at this point. But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed over here, and I, you know, I'm getting the feeling that you got the same impression, is like, I usually use the term travel to express this, but I think it's your time on Survivor is included, is that it's just exposing yourself to difference, you yeah. know, that really, it just opens up your perspective. And it's like, oh my God, that's why I love Mateo's over here living here. You know, he's thinking about going back to the States, maybe he will, but who cares, man? He's been over here for like 8 months. Even when he came over here for 1 week to visit me, he was different when he went back to yeah. the States. And now he's been over here 8 months. He's lived in a different culture, in a different way, seeing different things. And he's impacted for life because of that in a positive way, you yeah. know? So do you feel that, you know, just being in that experience has just broadened your mind and your perspective?
Yeah, it has, because for different levels, different reasons. But my biggest thing with it is that it's broadened my mindset towards what it is that I can accomplish, what it is that I can do. I put my mind to being on Survivor. You know, I put all my effort and all my energy towards it, and it came to fruition. You know, and it, don't get me wrong, it's frustrating all throughout the entire process, but it was the positivity that I kept. Because the fun fact that I have is that I put my tape in 2019. I went to LA for casting in 2019. And I was told I was on the show. I was ready to go in 2020, 4 days before COVID hit and the whole world shut down. Is when I was you know, they called me up and said, we're not doing anything. We're putting it to a halt because we don't know what's going on. And then maybe 11 months later, they said, we're going in a different direction. Even though they said they're going in a different direction, I knew I was going to be on the show. I still had that thing in my mind. It was heartbreaking, but still had that thing in my mind. So time goes by, 10 months later, here they're calling me back. They're like, Bruce, you want to, you know, you're still interested. I'm like, yeah, I am. I knew you'd be calling me. Like, your mistake the first time and not having me come back, you know, all's forgiven. So now it's like, you know, as cocky as that might have sounded, it was more of a sense for me, it was more of a sense of relief that they called me back, because then it just let me know that all the stuff that I put out there mentally out in the, you know, in the universe, it was not for nothing, because I knew that I had a feeling I was going to be on the show again.
Yeah.
And then I get hurt, and I still had this thing in the back of my mind, like, you know, I could play again, because I never really played. And sure enough, you know, the day that I got hurt, the day I got hurt, and they were taking me off on the stretcher. I don't know if you saw that episode.
Yeah, I did.
There was only one. I was actually halfway through one. it's so funny. I spoke to Jeff and Matt. Jeff, you know, the showrunner, and Matt, you know, executive producer. I spoke to them, and they were like, Bruce, let's back up. The day that I was leaving, I was being carted out on the stretcher. Jeff and Matt were talking about how they're going to get me back on the show. Right. That day, like that moment, it wasn't like, you know, you gave us a run. Like, that's when they started talking about it. Wow. And then when I got home and everything like that, I'm like, I have unfinished business, so they're going to call me back. I know they're going to call me back, but I never really knew until they actually made the announcement. And then it was such a huge release of like emotion, because I was going to play the game that I love again.
Yeah.
You know? So I take that very same thing with whatever it is that I do. Like, I, you know, I'm a realtor. So, you know, at this point in time with the market the way that it is, you've got to wish and hope stuff's going to come out, because, you know, you're not selling nothing. But it's like, you want to be able to just keep that positive mindset, keep that positive energy, and everything's going to be thrown at you. You know, for lack of better words, no pun intended, you know, when it comes to houses, the kitchen sink, you know, the front door, the mailbox, everything's going to be thrown at you. So you just got to be able to know how to, you know, catch it in the air or dodge it, and then go from there.
That's it. That's it. We can't control what happens, but we can control our response to it.
That is correct.
Wow. And that was perfect. That was a perfect wrap up, perfect ending. It really encompassed everything, because that's it. You know, we can't control life, but, you know, keep moving towards what we want, and it does come to fruition.
There you go. Amen.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you very much, Bruce. This has been awesome. Good to catch up. And we'll wrap up the recording, and maybe we'll chat for a couple minutes after. But yeah, thanks a lot for being on. It was awesome to share your experience. And I think that I loved how it played out personally. Like, it just, like, you know, you gave such a nice account of your unique experience and the life lessons that tied into it. And it was just like, I didn't know what I hoped for, but I would have hoped for this. So it worked out well. Thanks a lot for being on.
I appreciate you. I really do.
All right, man. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And we will talk with you soon. Peace.